So this morning I want to talk about the relationship between the individual self and the universal self and how they relate together, how they interact, and I mean, most of you by now know your individual self. You have some. No? Am I already supposing too much? You should have some awareness of who you are as an individual. Well, I can't explain who you are as an individual. I wouldn't know how to do that. And the universal self is everything. The universal self is all there is. It is like the song of every bird, the thought of every cab driver, dream of every schoolchild. So the universal self is everything. And once you realize it's everything, you see it is a living being. It is alive. It is existence. When we come into this world, we are, the moment we are born, or even before we are born, when the soul comes into the fetus in the womb, we are part of this whole drama of existence. It's extraordinarily beautiful, terrible, mysterious, multifaceted organism we call life, we call existence, we call the planet, we call Gaia, doesn't matter, whatever you call it. This divine being that causes us so many problems and wastes so much of our time and entrances us and fills us with desires and takes us back to God, everything. It is all here. And it is all us. We are that. And every moment it is different. And every moment it is the same. This continual rebirth of creation, this continual re-expression of I am that. And of course, most of the time we dream through it. We are fast asleep, snoring gently as the years go by. Some of us snore more gracefully than others. And for a moment we are present in it all. We are alive. And then the dreams come again. And the years pass. And maybe there is this brief moment just after we die, when we look back and say, so that's what it was all about. And we try to understand our experience here, and then we get caught back again. And once again, the cycle continues. This strange relationship of the individual human being to life, to the dream of life, and behind the dream of life, in the midst of the dream of life, to what life really is. Say this extraordinarily beautiful and terrible expression of the divine, which is also our divine, because there is no other divine. There isn't the divine in the world and the divine in us. There aren't two separate divines. There isn't God in heaven and God on earth. There aren't two of him. And it is us, and it is not us. And this is one of the great paradoxes that the mystic has to confront. The I and the not I. Because once you realize that everything is you, you are the song of every bird, You are the cry of every child. Like Rumi said, I am the rain raining on the meadows. And he also said, never did the dust of mortality settle on my skirt, O dervish. And there is this extraordinary play between the individual and life. We've been kind of conditioned not to get involved in it, to keep ourselves to ourselves. That only people who have positions of power can actually really be involved in what's happening. This is the wonderful conditioning of the hierarchy of the patriarchy. Been very, very effective. And it's kind of withdrawn us back into ourselves until all we are left with are ourselves, and then we start to develop these extraordinary problems. You know, we find therapists to help us work on them, and that takes us even further into ourselves. And one day, if we are lucky, we go so deep inside ourselves, we find that we are no longer in ourselves, and we are back in the universe. And then the whole play starts all over again. And then there begins this inbreathing and outbreathing, this extraordinary relationship of the individual and life. The Sufis always said we are made in the image of God. But we don't dare to really take upon us the mystery of that. That means we are made in the image of life. Because God is life. I was a hidden treasure and I longed to be known, so I created the world. So the world is the outpouring of the divine. Continually changing, continually the same. And there comes a time on the path when that is also true for you. You are continually changing. The person you knew yesterday is not the person you are today, and you are continually the same. It's hard then to catch up with yourself. We have this culture that longs to have things fixed, and then we know about it. And then we claim that knowledge for ourselves. Unfortunately, life is not like that. Life is not fixed. You don't really know the world you will wake up in tomorrow is the same world you went to sleep today. What we do is, in order to avoid that, we create an image of the world that we then keep with us, so nothing really changes. So we get a new car every 6 years, and that's about it. Or a new relationship every 14 years, or however much you want to do it. But really, it's we've created this safe image of a world that doesn't change, so we can avoid living in a world that does change. And sometimes we create a safe image of ourself that doesn't change to avoid living with a self that is continually changing. Because we are life. We are part of life. Everything in life influences us. That's why they say a butterfly flaps its wings in China and there is a storm in South America. Did the thought that came into our mind today, where did it come from? Did it come from the person in the cabin next to us? We don't know. We are so caught in the sense of this is me and I have a way to live that is mine. And doing so, we cut ourselves off from life, from this miracle that is us and that is not us. And I think it's time that we kind of stepped out of this self-imposed isolation. You know, this suburban cul-de-sac in which we have been living. And actually began to make a relationship with life and with the divine. Not as something other than us, but as also as who we are. And to claim back that universal self that is us, that doesn't just belong to some yogi sitting in a cave in the Himalayas, or to some transcendent god, or to some text by Jili, the Sufi master, who wrote about the universal man. That it's our life. And then with it, we will begin to claim the power that belongs to that. the power that somehow has been subtly taken away from us for hundreds of years. Because once you realize that you are the center of creation, like Meister Eckhart said, remember, God is a circle whose center is everywhere and circumference is nowhere. We are every moment at the center of creation. We are not on the outside looking in. We are in the place where everything is happening. And the place where everything is happening is where we are. Where we really are, not in the dream. We are dreaming. That is just a result of indigestion. Then there becomes this very, very dynamic relationship between us and life. And life needs us to be awake because life is dying. Life is dying because it has become somebody's bad dream. It's become somebody's nightmare. But if we are awake, we can change that because there is this incredible dynamic relationship between the individual and life. We don't know where life comes from unless you go deep in meditation. And then you discover this place where life comes from, where life is pouring out of the uncreated into creation. That's in the book of Revelations, and he showed me the clear river of light pouring out of the throne. That's where life comes from. And it's within us. You can go there, you can be there. You can be at this place where light or love comes out of the uncreated. And then it comes down into manifestation. And what we don't realize is that it's this very subtle relationship between humanity and this life energy that then creates the world. Before human beings came to the planet with consciousness, or before consciousness was given to the planet, it happened slightly differently. It was created much more by devas and angels. And over the years, over the centuries, over the millennia, they have receded. Until now we live, as we all know, in a man-created world. But we just see the outer image of this. And then we blame other people, governments, or whatever, for the mess we are in. But the mystic knows it is always our fault. If you like, it is the ultimate malamati. We are always to blame. The mystic always takes it back. Back to the core. You can do that with your own life when things you feel are out of balance. You go back within yourself, back to the place inside yourself where they started to get out of balance. And then you do a subtle shift. If you like, you move the mirror a little. So the light is reflected more clearly into your life. It's part of what we do when we do dream work, when we go within. You go back to where something is out of balance and you move the mirror a bit. And then the light that creates your life comes more clearly. It's not complicated. That's one of the bases of inner work, of changing one's inner and outer self. We don't expect anybody else to change our life for us, except the grace of God. And the grace of God is just the light that flows through us. And you can move it and it creates a slightly different image of your life. Of course, there are those either wonderful or terrible times when, for example, you meet a teacher who changes your life altogether, like Shams did with Rumi, who reflects it completely differently. Suddenly, you see your life completely different. It's a completely different image of your life. Those moments of awakening. So this shows the inner dynamic, the potential that is there. And the way the whole of life is the same. The whole of life is this in-breathing and out-breathing. And the whole of life is created by the dreams of humanity. Or I might say now, by the nightmares of humanity. And it's a very beautiful relationship of the individual and the whole. And it is a relationship of one to one, because you are the whole. The moment you step outside of this prison of your isolated self, you realize, of course, you are the whole. How could you not be the whole? What else is there? Are you other than God? If He is one and you are Him, then you are also one. But how to live that? How to bring that mystical awareness down into life? That is where it becomes a bit tricky. Particularly in the West, where that mystical potential has been systematically persecuted out of existence. The Gnostics, the Cathars, they were all quite systematically got rid of. So we have to reclaim it. It is like the most basic Sufi zikr, la ilaha illallah, there is no God but God. Means first, there is no God, la ilaha. You negate all the projections that culture has created, all the gods of this world. Illallah, but God, and you affirm that reality in the midst of life. Tremendously empowering. You strip away everything that our whole culture has covered you with. All the gods of this world. La ilaha, there is no God. You disempower all the collective illusions. And all the collective illusions are actually very disempowering in themselves. Now they belong to these well-oiled corporate machines that want you to buy things you don't need. And the ilala is the affirmation of that which is real. And the beauty of it is that which is real is in everything. It isn't somewhere else. That which is real is in the core of every cell of creation. It is an affirmation of what is. Everything that exists has the name of God written on it. It's like Dul Nun, who had the experience of seeing every cell of existence praising God. Every fish in the sea praising God. So it is in a way working with the prima materia of life. Of affirming the prima materia of life and saying, let's really do something together to get out of this mess. Let's make something happen. It's just a simple shift in consciousness that is very simple but very radical. La ilaha illallah, turning from one world to another to affirm something. And to affirm your right as an individual to be part of God and to be God's representative. Which means to be part of creation. Not to allow somebody else to create the world you live in, which is what has happened. We allow somebody else to create our world, and then we live in it, surprise, we get problems. Because we're living in somebody else's world. It's not the real world. You know what it's like trying to live up to your parents' expectations, if your parents had any expectations. And we've kind of magnified that 10 million times, and we're trying to live up to the expectations of some collective dream, which in America has become this bizarre dream of materialism, that stuff will make you happy. Which is really, I mean, when you actually look at it, that a divine light will be fulfilled by having stuff. It reminds me of, you know, when I was a kid, we used to get pocket money that we could spend down at the sweet shop. You have them in England, you have these little stores that are just, in those days, just sold candy, little sweet shop. They sold newspapers and candy. When I grew up, I got a penny for every age of your life and one penny for luck. And one penny for church, because you had to give a penny to the collection on Sunday for church. So if you were five, you got sixpence to spend at the sweet shop. And I thought, you know, isn't it amazing? You know, when I grow up and I'm going to become an adult, I'm going to have all this money. And I'm going to be able to buy as much candy as I like. And I thought it was a really rip-off. That when you got older and you got all this money, you didn't want. I could never understand that logic. You know, they're these adults. They had not just sixpence, they had pounds. They had, you know, they had wallets full of the stuff, and they should have been supremely happy. They could have as much candy as they liked, and they didn't want it anymore. I mean, it's not saying we can change life. That's kind of banal. It's like we are life. It's not that there's this puzzle we have to try and sort out. I mean, first of all, that would take far too long anyway. Because it's somebody else's puzzle. It's not our puzzle. We don't even have to sort it out. You don't have to do that. It's like trying to sort out your parents' problems. You know, I tried that for I think from when I was 15 to when I was 20. Complete waste of time. And then you decide, hey, maybe I should live my life. And then everything changes. And then when you realize your life is life, with a capital L, then everything changes again. And then you begin this relationship of one-to-one, which is the only real relationship. Relationship of two things to each other is not a real relationship. And it's never going to work out anyway. Most of you know that by now. Because it will always remain two. But a relationship of one-to-one, that's when things start to happen. And that's, of course, the fundamental relationship of the soul to God. From the alone to the alone, the one-to-one relationship. That is the stamp of the mystic, that you are prepared to make that relationship, that one-to-one relationship, with your own essence, with God, with the divine, it doesn't matter. Nobody else can do it for you. But why stop there? Why not also embrace this aspect of the divine that is life? And why not make a one-to-one relationship with life that is not other than you? And then you can be present where life is. Once you embrace that relationship, just like when you embrace the relationship with God, then you are present at that place within your soul where that relationship takes place. As long as you avoid that relationship, as long as you run away from that relationship, you are not present at that place inside yourself where that relationship happens. You are running away from yourself. You are running away from life. From this extraordinarily dynamic, constantly changing substance that expresses itself in the world we sometimes experience. I always remember my first experience, because you go back to that again and again and again, when I was 16 and I woke up and I suddenly found myself present in this world I didn't even know existed. And it was so alive. And it was so full of life and full of joy and full of light. And there were no problems there. There was just something extraordinary happening. Like this line from the poem, the gay great happening illimitably earth. That's E. Cummings. The gay great happening illimitably earth. That is where we are. That's what we are born into. Most of us forget that very quickly. But the moment you realize and accept that this world is an expression of the divine, is a revelation of the divine, is the divine revealing itself, then you go back to the core of creation, to that moment when the light comes out of the uncreated and begins to reveal something. It's a beautiful moment, that first light, the river of life pouring out of the throne. It's here, it's present. And we are it because we are also a creation of that. The beauty of being a human being is we can actually experience consciously what is veiled from the rest of creation. The rest of creation can only experience it unconsciously. But we have the ability to consciously experience what is actually taking place with our spiritual consciousness. You can go within the heart and you can see this love coming into existence. You can be there. You can witness it. And you can be part of it. You are part of it. You can be present at that moment of pure joy, pure love, pure light. And then see how out of that pure moment so much is born. So much comes into being. So many colors get reflected back as that light comes through the prism of existence, and suddenly all the many colors and many faces and many people. And you know, the interesting thing is, once you realize it is all one person, there is no you or me. That is an exquisite illusion. I mean, it's a masterful illusion, and we believe in it. It's like we have been tricked by the great magician. And then we've taken it one step further and created this individual self that has problems, that has to sort itself out and resolve issues. And I'm sure you've been through enough of that by now. And we do it lifetime after lifetime. And suddenly you realize, hey, maybe it's not really about this. Maybe it's not really about this I, maybe it's about somebody else's I. That's that moment they say, my servant ceases not to draw nigh unto me with works of devotion until I love him. And when I love him, I become the eye by which he sees, the ear by which he hears, the tongue by which he tastes. And then suddenly you see life as it actually is. Completely different. Completely different. You can say you see it with the eyes of God, but this is not some transcendent God. This is not somebody else. There never was anybody else. Yes, there is this aspect of the divine that is beyond our comprehension, that is always expanding. Like Baisab said about Brahma Vidya, thousands of years and thousands of years are not enough. Brahma Vidya is knowledge of Brahma, knowledge of the ultimate truth. It goes on and on forever. It is always receding. Consciousness, mystical consciousness, is always expanding. Even Baisab couldn't catch up with Guru Maharaj. Always expanding. It's always deeper and deeper levels of mystical consciousness. And at the same time, it is the I. It is this extraordinary gift of individual consciousness we have been given. That we can see what is really happening and then not just be this passive observer, which was the mystic's role in the past. We were kind of conditioned just to watch, just to be the observer, not to interfere, to let people follow their dreams, follow their mirage, just to watch it. You can do that for lifetimes. You just watch. It becomes it's a sort of spiritual practice just to watch. The shaheed, the witness, the one who watches. You just watch. There's this lovely line in Lear, Shakespeare's play King Lear, when King Lear reunites with Cordelia and they get imprisoned. And he says, to take upon us the mystery of things as if we were God's spies. Just to watch. They watch. He talks about the politics of the time. Who's in and who's out? They just watch. And for hundreds and hundreds of years, this was the role of the mystic, just to watch. You don't judge. You just watch. And then, for some reason, a different set of instructions came down, were given to mystics. Now it's time to get involved, what I call mystical activism. It's not rushing around in the world trying to be helpful, because that just creates another illusion, and there are enough illusions as it is, please. If you want to create a slightly nicer illusion, you can, but mystical activism is really to be present in life, and to participate in life as it is. And then one can change something. You see, it's like if you imagine that out of the uncreated, you can experience this meditation, out of the nothingness, where there is nothing. Because it's very interesting, Baisab said to Tweedy, there comes a time when even the love will go. And I have spoken about this. There is a place in non-being where even love doesn't exist. And then there is this beautiful moment when love comes into existence. When out of the vast nothingness, it's not nothingness of course, but one can call it the vast void, the dark silence. Out of that vast emptiness there is this moment when love comes into, very beautiful, when love comes into existence. Begins to come, and begins to flow into the planes of manifestation. And it's like that is also the creative image, the creative energy of God, this love, because everything is made out of love. Love is the fabric of existence. We don't realize that. It's always strange, and I've done that drama myself. You know, we chase after love. We're always looking for love, and everything is love. It's not just love is in our own hearts. Of course, love is more easy to experience directly in our own hearts because there is not the veils of creation. There is just that pure experience of love, but everything is love. Love is the substance of creation. If there was no love, everything would just fall away. So if you imagine this stream of love or light, this pure river, pure water of life coming from the throne, coming from this place. It's a place. And then it comes into this, if you like, think of it as a prism that then throws the light into all the different colors of creation, into this rainbow hue. And just imagine you are there at that place. And you move the prism tiny, tiny, tiny bit. It's like changing the axis of the world just a little bit. Apparently this is what happened with the tsunami. It was very interesting. I'm sure most of you know that the tsunami shifted the axis of the world a little bit. Just a tiny, tiny little bit. But if you go back to that place, which is just here, there's not anywhere else, it's here. And you just move the prism, tiny, tiny little bit, then all the rainbow colors are slightly different. Then all the dreams of humanity are slightly different. See, that to me is cost-effective work. Because changing the dreams when they come into existence is so time-consuming. And corporations are much better at it. They can convince you you need an SUV. You know, and they've done it. They do it again and again and again. They are geared up to do that. We don't have the resources for that. We don't have the marketing skills as mystics. We probably could if we put our mind to it, but our mind is with God. And you can say God has the greatest marketing skills because he makes people believe in the illusions of the world, but that's a whole other story. But it seems to me much more sensible to go back and to move the prism a little bit. Go back to the core of creation and then what they call with a wing and a prayer, with just a sort of smile, just to change that. Can be done because you see the esoteric lore is one is not allowed to interfere in somebody else's life unless they're about to really screw up. Sometimes you wait till after they've really screwed up when they're a bit, you know. Or you give a little warning before they really screw up and they ignore it. You know? And then, trouble is after they've really screwed up, you have to kind of then clear up the mess and it's not worth it. So, traditionally, just before a human being is allowed to make a real mess of their life, is about to make a real mess of their lives, you're allowed to interfere mystically. This is the law. You know that moment when you're just going down the altar with the wrong guy, you know? And that's when the hero or heroine is allowed to burst in and say, "But you really love me!" And all the relatives are waiting and all the, you know. There is always that moment in your life, you know, when the divine light comes and the hint comes or the bomb explodes or whatever it is and says. And just like that is for the individual, it's also true for the world. Just before things are about to get irreversible, one is allowed to intervene. One doesn't have to be just the observer sitting back and watching who's in and who's out, watching the rise and fall of human chaos. And as I say, mystics have been very good at that. You know, you find a little cave somewhere, or a little ashram, or a monastery, or somewhere, and you sit for a few lifetimes watching it all come and go and come and go. It's just a dream. Some dreams are better than other dreams. There are these moments, like now, when one is allowed, permission is given, however you call it, to actually intervene. And then things get a little bit exciting and a little bit kind of different because it really has to do with where the real power is. And, you know, one of the reasons I wrote my next book, which is coming out in a couple of months, Spiritual Power, is I was kind of finally prompted to actually express, you know, or describe where the real power is, which is not in the hands of politicians or armies or corporate bankers or whatever, because they're working with illusions. And they may be a better magician at pulling a better rabbit out of a hat, but it's still just another trick. The real power has always been spiritual power, because that's where the source of energy is. You might as well go to the, you know, the power station if you want the real power. And that's where you can play a little bit with creation. Remember, creation is not fixed. You know, we've now discovered that Newton's laws are a nice approximation, but they're not actually real anymore. And nobody quite knows what all this probability really means. That it's probable that this is a table, but I'm not quite sure. It's like somebody changed the rule book of existence, but we haven't quite worked out what it is. I mean, if you really look at the whole ideology of probability, it is that nobody knows what's happening. We can have a good guess that we're all actually here sitting in a room. And we kind of had breakfast this morning, but you know, as a mystic, you realize that's only a possibility. Maybe we're all somewhere else entirely. What I'm saying is that because creation is changing much faster than we realize, except most people are living in a dream that's kind of, you know, last year's soap opera. You know, a rerun of the first episode of Friends. You know, it's kind of... It does allow a lot of potential for change. The great thing is you can actually change things and nobody will notice because they're still living in this episode of Friends. And that gives you a lot of freedom. I always used to get up very early in the morning. I still do. And I remember when my kids were young and like we went for a holiday and we're staying in a friend's house. And I would get up really early in the morning because I reckon I got a couple of hours before everybody else got up. And you know, I'd go down to the beach and I go for a long walk on the beach and I have all sorts of experiences and I'd come back to the house and everybody would still be sleeping. And it was this very, very strange experience. Is you'd had a whole experience of the day and nobody else had woken up. You know, you could have done anything. You know, you could have climbed a mountain, you could have painted a picture and everybody else was still sleeping. And so it didn't exist for anybody else because they were still sleeping. And that's why if you're actually awake and actually alive and actually present, you can do all sorts of things that nobody will notice until they wake up, if they wake up. And if they don't wake up, that's their problem. I have a feeling that certain people are going to live in a world that's going to self-destruct because that's the dream they have created. And they're going to live in it and it's all going to fall apart. And they can get terribly upset as all their money goes or whatever it is. But another us would have actually been living in a completely different world. You know, we can listen to the radio and hear their stories, but we're actually going to be living in a completely different world that hasn't self-destroyed, that's tremendously alive and really exciting, and all sorts of other things are going to be happening. And they're going to be living in the tail end of a dream. And we're going to actually be alive in a world that we will have helped birth, helped bring into being, because the next era, the next world, has to be brought into being by human beings. That's what's written in the book of creation. It can't be done by devas, it can't be done by angels, it has to be brought into being through human consciousness. And it can't just be done by realized masters. It's democratic society now. Anybody can have a go. It's true. true. I mean, the old hierarchies of everybody says they've all gone, you know? So it's up to anybody. It's a global civilization. Everybody can tune in and anybody can change the world. You have to be awake, which kind of, I guess, limits possible participants. We got a kind of head start because we're in the awake business. We've been trying to wake up all of our life, at least since we started spiritual life. And that's where the fun starts. You don't have to get involved. This is what people don't realize. This is really important to explain. You don't have to get involved in the dream that is dying. It would absorb all of your energy. And what would you do? You change a dying dream a little bit. You'd make the end a little bit less dramatic, possibly, or quicker, who knows? Who cares? It's still a dream. It's not real. The world is not coming to an end. Somebody's world is coming to an end, yes. But the world is an expression of the divine. He continually recreates himself. Every moment he recreates himself. So there's no end because it's beginning and ending every moment. There's no point in trying to change the world as we know it. Because the world as we apparently know it is not the world at all. Just like Newtonian physics do not describe the world, but we still live in a culture that accepts Newtonian physics as the status quo. There's no point in trying to change this dream of this ecological disaster and corporate America and global exploitation. Complete waste of time. You can write fascinating articles about it and give lecture tours about it. And it will have zero effect because it is a dream. What's interesting is you know, mystics have always known this. But we haven't been allowed to put it into practical use very much. Because our role has always just been the observer, just to watch it, just to watch the dreams of humanity, the dreams as they spin themselves out. You know, cycle after cycle, era after era. But the exciting thing is there actually is this moment of something being recreated, some new, in a way, yes, there will be a new dream will be born. Because I don't think humanity as a whole yet is able to wake up. It'd be just too devastating. Having been in the spiritual business for long enough, I've seen what the effect it is when, for a moment, an individual wakes up and realizes that everything they thought about themselves was a complete fabrication. It can be devastating when you realize that every idea you have of yourself and your life is completely untrue. It's a shock to the system. That's why you have to have a certain stamina to be able to survive that shock. That's why a lot of spiritual training is actually developing a kind of inner strength. So when you awake, you don't completely crack up. Everything you think about yourself is what they call a load of baloney, isn't that what they call it? No. Humanity as a whole could not possibly cope with that. You know, one can be democratic up to a point. You know, a new dream is going to be created. The beauty of it is that those who want to can actually help create this new dream. That's what's really exciting. Because most people, 99.9, and even lots of well-intentioned people, and even lots of spiritual people, they're still tinkering with the old dream. You know, they're still trying to improve themselves or make the world a better place. I mean, it's very good ideas, but they're making a dream a better dream. And it's over. I mean, I always like that sort of simile, you know, changing the dance on the dance floor of the Titanic. It doesn't really matter if you're going to do a waltz or a foxtrot. You know, it seems important at that moment who you get to dance with, but you know, it is the Titanic after all. So why not just forget about all of that? I mean, you can't completely forget about it because everybody else is living in it. And when you go to work, you have to pretend to participate in it, otherwise you don't get a salary. You know? It's just you know, the way things are. You have to be a little bit of a dreaming realist or a realistic dreamer or whatever you call it. You know, why not actually step into where something real is happening and you can actually recreate, or no, create, start to create the dream that will last the next 2,000 years. I mean, that's much more fun. I mean, that's, to me, that's much more exciting. And you can actually do something. I mean, you know, most of us for lifetimes have been not doing as because we're mystics, you know, we're not allowed to do, we have to watch. We've been waiting for this one moment. Maybe it'll only last 5 minutes, you know, where you can actually do something. You can actually be there at the center of creation, representing the divine, representing our tradition, and start to make things happen. Start to change the way the energy of creation comes into manifestation. Not too much, because you don't want all the mountains to disappear too quickly. You know, they could have disastrous consequences. You don't want New York to suddenly vanish. You know, I mean, it would be problematic for people who think they're living there. And it's a lot of fun. This is what people don't realize. You know, they all take creation very seriously. But creation was never meant to be serious. I mean, look around you. I mean, it's all such a muddle and a chaos and so beautiful and so crazy and so violent. I mean, who would do that seriously? It's not a well-intentioned God. I always feel this is one of the great sadnesses of the Puritan culture, is that they didn't like the fool. They didn't like the maypole dancing. They didn't like the whole craziness. They developed this very proper God who doesn't have a lot of fun. You're allowed to have fun if you kind of go to Hollywood or go to Disneyland. That's allowed. But spiritually, no. Spiritual, serious stuff. Creation, serious business. You know, you've got to solve the problems of the world. But, you know, who created the problems of the world? Does it matter? And if you go to where creation is happening, it's a lot of fun, because creation is an experiment. It's continually trying different things. Is this going to work? Is that not going to work? What reflects more light back to God? Is it a butterfly or a bee or a bomb? We don't know. We take ourselves very seriously, and we take creation very seriously. And Puck was got rid of, that merry wanderer of the night. And if you go to where creation is happening, it's going to be, that's what really shocked me, because I'm a very traditional kind of hardcore mystic, you know, and I believe in, you've got to do your 30 years of pure suffering and you know, and then you get a little bit of light. And beginning of the year 2000, that was all taken away from me, and I felt, you know, what a ripoff, you know, I'd done my 20 years of suffering and somebody told me it wasn't about that after all. And suddenly there was this energy that came, and it was just enormous amounts of fun. And I hadn't really been brought up to expect that. I always remember that Sounds True did this set of tapes, some of you know, of the I Am Wood, You Are Fire. And somebody who didn't know much about Sufism, I always wondered why I didn't sell very well. And they explained to me, he said, look, you know, there are 10 tapes, and there are 8 on pure suffering, and you have to go through all of those until you get to the last 2 tapes of something else. So, yeah, 'cause that's traditional mysticism, you know, that's how it is. Suddenly this other energy came, and it was just so much fun, I couldn't believe it. This energy that came through was just this enormous amount of fun. And it's like, do you want to join in? Do you want to participate? You've got to get rid of a whole lot of stuff. Yeah, we've been doing that for the last few years, you know, all this spiritual conditioning, all this, it's got to be hard work, it's got to be diligent, it's got to be all of those attitudes you have. And I mean, it's love. Who ever heard of a serious love affair? I mean, lots of people try, but it usually... Crazy love affair, yes. Exasperating love affair, yes. Exhilarating love affair, yes. But this creation is a love affair. You know, and we're part of it. And that's where the fun starts. Because we're lovers, we know about the craziness of love. Sufis have always been crazy. Otherwise, they couldn't be mystics. Otherwise, they would accept this physical world as it is and live in it like sensible people and get their BMWs or whatever it is sensible people get. And we get the love of God. I mean, you know, you've got to be crazy to want that. We're used to being crazy. We're used to being tricked, because you get tricked by the beloved all the time. The only shift now is we don't just have to be victims of it all. We can actually engage fully and be present, and be present where this whole crazy, chaotic, beautiful adventure takes place. And our consciousness is needed to help create the next dream. Through our consciousness, this primal light of creation creates the rainbow-colored dream for humanity. And that's what's really exciting. And it is this relationship of our individual self to the universal self, which is one and the same because it's all one. Once you realize it's all one, it is all one. It's this extraordinary relationship of one to one, which is very, very magical. That is going to create this next dream, going to create this whole experience. And we're right there at the very beginning. It's like that Shakespeare play, which begins, "I came upon things dying, and thou came upon things newborn." And you can look this way, and you can see this dying dream. Go to any shopping mall. Human beings were not meant for that. Human beings were not meant to spend their lives watching big screen TVs. Or you can turn here and say, wow. There is this moment in time. A few years, just a moment in time. When one could participate in the whole rebirth of a civilization. And there is so much energy there. There is so much power there. There is so much love there because it is not conditioned. It is not caught. What people don't realize is once a culture is created, the energy and love is caught in the structure of the culture. It is caught in the fabric. It is there if you look close enough. But it's difficult to access. All the energy then has gone into keeping this fabric, this structure intact, keeping this lifestyle going. But before it's been created, there's so much more energy there, there's so much more vitality there. What is really important is in this next step, we are allowed to participate. We don't have to be observers anymore. We don't have to just sit and to watch these dreams of humanity coming and going and coming and going. We can actually be there and get our hands dirty in the business of creation and use our consciousness aligned to the will of God to help the light that is reflected take on a form that is closer to his form rather than to the desires of the ego. And that is really exciting. That is really exhilarating. And a lot of fun. Because we don't know how it's going to be. The book hasn't been written. There are possibilities. Like any love affair, there are possibilities. And this is a love affair of creation. And as mystics, we can be present where this love affair of creation comes into being, where it takes on form. We don't have to separate ourselves from creation anymore. We can plant the seeds that will become the flowers. We are there, right? And it hasn't happened yet. The next era, there are certain things that are going to happen. That's just a vague outline. But a lot of it hasn't yet happened, hasn't yet been decided yet. There are possibilities. And we are actually allowed to participate directly with the energy of creation, with the stream of love as it comes into existence. If we want to.